Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
The companies are certainly very happy about the ceasefire announcement, but they remain skeptical because most ceasefire announcements or truces in the past have not been respected on the ground.
Foreign ministers from Congo and Rwanda agreed to a ceasefire accord.
The protests will continue. As you can see, despite the killings that occurred yesterday, despite the attack, despite the repression and oppression, the Nigerian security forces, we are still on the street today. We are on the street. Now we are running for our dear lives. The street of Abuja is filled with over 5,000 citizens.
It's the third day of the nationwide protest over demands for good governance in Nigeria.
These allegations are profoundly baseless and unsubstantiable. They are a sideshow created to try and keep the nation busy because they have no substantive alternative policies that they are able to promulgate to the citizenry.
And Zambia's information minister denies plans to change the constitution to boost President Hakainde Hichilema's stay in office. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. A political analyst says actions of the international community are crucial to bringing lasting peace to the eastern part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Dede Watshiba also says the sincerity of all stakeholders is important to bring peace to the country's troubled east. His remarks come after the foreign ministers of the DRC and Rwanda agreed to a ceasefire brokered by Angola. Making the announcement, the Angolan presidency said the enforcement of the new ceasefire would begin at midnight on August 4th. Analysts say the ceasefire accord could bring some respite to citizens affected by violence blamed on the conflict between the National Army and the M23 rebels. For analysis and the latest political development, I reach Dede Watshiba.
The announcement of a ceasefire is a positive step toward peace, but its success will depend on many factors. Firstly, the willingness and the sincerity of the belligerents to respect the agreement, and secondly, the ability of the international community to support the peace process.
Do you think the Congolese people are happy about the announcement of the ceasefire by the Angolan presidency?
Yes, of course. The Congolese are certainly very happy about the ceasefire announcement, but they remain skeptical because most ceasefire announcements or truces in the past have not been respected on the ground. Do not forget that several million Congolese have already died due to endless wars in the country. This population truly needs peace.
What do you think the role of Angola in trying to bring peace is? Do you think it has been overall very positive?
Yeah, it's positive. Angola plays an essential and active role as a mediator in the attempt to bring peace between the DRC and the Rwanda. Through its diplomatic effort, monitoring initiatives, and support for reconciliation and economic development, Angola significantly contributes to the stabilization of the African Great Lakes region.
What are your expectations for improved relations between Congo and Rwanda after the meeting which led to the ceasefire agreement being announced by the Angolan presidency?
Beyond everything I just mentioned, first, addressing the root causes of conflict is fundamental for me. Through economic and social development actions, we can address the economic and social causes of conflict, such as poverty, unemployment, and inequality, with sustainable and inclusive development programs. And it goes without saying that it is also necessary to establish transitional justice mechanisms to address the past crimes, promote reconciliation, and enable community to move beyond conflict. Ultimately, it is also important to have functional and democratic states in the sub-region to sustain a climate of peace between the state and the population.
Do you see any role by SADC, the African Union, the international community, including the United Nations, to bring peace to Congo?
Absolutely. They have a fundamental role to play. They have to accompany this process. With their involvement, I think we can just guarantee that all the process will be a success. So without this support of these organizations, we cannot access it to the peace. So we need the involvement of all these organizations to effectively get this peace we are looking for.
Dede Wachiba is a Congolese political analyst. He spoke with me from Paris, France. In Nigeria, Abiodun Sanusi, organizer of the Take It Back movement, which called for the ongoing demonstration, says unarmed civilian protesters are not to blame for the violence against them. It is the third day of the 10-day demonstrations against bad governance and challenges the country is facing. It comes after Amnesty International demanded an investigation into the shooting death of at least 13 protesters of the End Bad Governance demonstrations that began on August 1st. This, as Nyesom Wike, the Minister for the Federal Capital Territory, or FCT, said, the security agencies have identified a senator who is sponsoring the protest without naming the legislator. Abiodun Sanusi, organizer of the Take It Back movement, tells me that protesters would not leave the streets until their demands are met, or for the president to address Nigerians about solutions to the country's challenges.
Yesterday, we protested very peacefully. We converged at the Moshood Abiola National Stadium in Abuja, and we started processing towards the Eagle Square, where the actual venue that we chose. However, the police officers came over to repress the movement. They shot tear gas canisters, they attacked protesters, and even beat and arrested some. And in fact, when you talked about the issue of the death of people, on our side, we've counted the death of about 17 persons across Nigeria. And when you look at these deaths, these were citizens, protesters that were killed. And they were killed by who? By the bullets, either the police or the military or any of the other Nigerian security agencies.
Nyesom Wike, the Minister for the Federal Capital Territory, FCT, said the government has identified a senator who is sponsoring the protest that you organized. What's your reaction to that?
Of course, the senator represents Abuja. She shared food and water to some protesters yesterday. Most of us didn't even see her. Probably they protested around our vicinity, and she gave them refreshment. How do you say a certain senator, and you could not even mention the name of the person, a certain senator is sponsoring protest that has been held across the 36 states of the Federation and the Federal Capital Territory? This is an organic protest. Nigerians are hungry. As I speak to you, we started the protest earlier today at a place, a junction known as Bega in the Federal Capital Territory. The police came and shot tear gas canisters at us. They chased people away, and now we regrouped at the Moshood Abiola National Stadium. We were marching towards the Eagle Square, and they came again.
Is this protest going to continue within the 10 days following these challenges you are having?
Yeah, the protest will continue. As you can see, despite the killings that occurred yesterday, despite the attack, despite the repression and oppression by the Nigerian security forces, we are still on the street today. We are on the street. Now we are running for our dear lives. The streets of Abuja is filled with over 5,000 citizens demanding an end to bad governance. We are over 5,000 here. The protest is also ongoing in Ibadan, Oyo State. It is ongoing in Lagos State, in Kano State, Borno in Zamfara, Edo in Enugu, in Imo. It is across the length and breadth of the Federal Republic of Nigeria. And we are not going to give up. We will do 10 days and probably beyond until the Nigerian government accedes to our demands.
What are your key demands? Five key demands. What are the five key demands?
Our five key demands is an immediate reversal of the fuel subsidy removal. The president must immediately announce that the subsidy removal, which he announced on May 29, 2003, is reversed. Secondly, the president recently assented to a bill by the National Assembly to pay 70,000 naira as minimum wage for Nigerian workers. We do not agree with this. We are demanding a 250,000 naira minimum wage. Thirdly, we are demanding an end to insecurity, an end to insecurity in the country. The Northeast region, the North Central, the Northwest, the Southeast are all, you know, being disturbed by insurgencies. Is it the Boko Haram or the ISWAP people in the North, or the IPOB and unknown gunmen issue in the Southeast? Insecurity has taken over Nigeria. The fourth one, we are demanding a decrease in electricity tariffs. And the fifth one, amongst others, we are demanding the release of all political prisoners. The release of all political prisoners, everybody that we arrested, especially during the ENSAS and after the aftermath of the ENSAS protest in Nigeria, the police release them. We are also demanding that the police gives the leader of the IPOB, Nnamdi Kanu, a fair trial.
Will you allow for negotiations for the government to meet your demand?
Well, on the issue of negotiation, the government hasn't talked about negotiation at all. We are not people who do not want good for the country. If the government says they want to negotiate, that was why we chose the Eagle Square. It is close to the presidential villa. It is close to the National Assembly. The president of the Federal Republic of Nigeria, President Bola Ahmed Tinubu, can come over to the Eagle Square to address us. You can go over to the Eagle Square and address us. Okay, you guys are demanding this. I'll do this. And if he just agrees that he will do those things and we see that he has started making those moves, we'll leave the streets.
Abiodun Sanusi is organizer of the Take It Back movement. He spoke with me from the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Sudanese political and civil forces welcomed the new U.S. initiative that invited the Sudanese army and their rapid support forces to participate in ceasefire talks scheduled in Switzerland on August 14, but said its success depends on the pressure that Washington will exert on the warring parties. RSF leader Mohamed Dagalo said his group will participate, but Sudan's foreign ministry said it wants more discussions with the U.S. before accepting the invitation. Joseph Siegel, director of research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies, discussed this initiative with VOA senior analyst Mohamed El Shinawi.
I think it's very noteworthy and positive that there is this renewed international commitment to get the two sides to negotiate. And it's important that the U.S. is taking the lead. We often hear from all sides that the U.S. is seen as an honest broker in Sudan, and so it can convene the various parties and can help to realize what will have to be a sustainable solution. It is very urgent that the negotiations are going to resume. The humanitarian situation in Sudan has been rapidly deteriorating, especially in Darfur. You know, there's 12 million people displaced, been 150,000 fatalities from this conflict. There's a potential famine in Darfur that is threatening hundreds of thousands of people. You know, in terms of the conflict itself, we've seen a stalemate. It's increasingly evident that neither side is going to prevail militarily. So really all the costs are falling on Sudanese civilians, has been the case, you know, throughout the, you know, 18 months of this conflict. And the longer the conflict goes, the more fractured the country becomes, the more influence external actors are going to have. And so the more difficult it is going to be to get the country back together. So I think there's a real urgency to see these negotiations come together and try and find a way forward. The fact that the Sudan armed forces have not formally accepted, I think, is mostly posturing at this point. Both sides have been participating in some indirect talks with the UN in Geneva. And so the hope is that the proposed talks would be a way of getting them together at the same time to build on that momentum.
The Foreign Policy magazine quoted five current and former officials familiar with the matter as affirming that the Biden administration is launching a new initiative to end the war in Sudan, with fresh peace talks following months of behind-the-scenes negotiations. Talks will be led by by Secretary Blinken and Linda Greenfield, the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations. They will be co-hosted by Saudi Arabia and Switzerland. Under what circumstances this initiative could succeed?
I think the first circumstance is that you're going to need to have a high level of engagement by the U.S. and the other negotiators who will be there. This is now a regional conflict, and so you're really going to need to be able to find some sort of common ground and some sort of path forward. And so it's very important that Secretary Blinken and Ambassador Greenfield are part of this negotiation. Both are very familiar with the situation in Sudan and can bring a lot of gravitas to the negotiations. It's also noteworthy that in addition to the other co-conveners, Saudi Arabia and Switzerland, that you have regional and international actors participating, the United Nations, the African Union, the UAE, Egypt are going to be there. So all of these have important stakes and roles in the process moving forward. In terms of other circumstances, I think they'll be focused on a number of things. First is the importance of establishing a durable ceasefire so that each military faction comes to understanding that they don't have more to gain through continued aggression. There'll be importance of immediately opening up humanitarian access, important to build confidence, strengthening measures so that each side recognizes that it won't be at a disadvantage by agreeing to a ceasefire. At some point, this may involve the deployment of some UN peacekeeping forces to act as a buffer and to enhance those confidence building measures. Because it's a regional conflict, there will also be an importance of trying to build confidence among the regional, the foreign actors that are supporting one side or the other. They need to recognize that a ceasefire is not going to compromise their interest, that it's not going to give an advantage to one of their rivals. So I think that'll be an important part of the negotiations. And then finally, we need to keep in mind that the success of these peace-building efforts are ultimately going to depend on bringing the Sudanese civilians into the center of this conversation. This isn't just a conflict between military factions, but this happened as part of a transition to civilian-led democratic government. And so just getting a ceasefire, while extremely important in the first step, it isn't enough to reach that durable peace. That's going to require the political actors to be front and center.
Joseph Siegel is Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies. He spoke with VOA Senior Analyst Mohamed El Shenawy from Washington. Ugandan traders have launched a nationwide strike to pressure the government for a meeting with President Yoweri Museveni. Thaddeus Musoke, the leader of the Kampala City Traders Association, or KASITA, says members of the organization are expressing disappointment after a scheduled meeting with the president was postponed. This, as President Museveni promised to meet them at the end of July to address their concerns, they said includes overtaxation, which they contend is crippling their businesses. For more about the strike, I reached Thaddeus Musoke, the leader of the Kampala City Traders Association.
We are striking because, first of all, the president has kept on postponing the day he's supposed to meet the traders. And even when the leadership were invited in the State House, instead of discussing among the challenges which he submitted to His Excellency, he was bringing another idea of where I call it a cartel, meaning like a fund which can facilitate traders migrate from being traders to manufacturers. But the concern
but what is wrong with that? What is wrong with that?
It wouldn't be a problem, but there are some issues which have been pending for 5 years, which we think that the president could at least have found possible solutions. But when we presented to him, he said, don't worry that on Saturday 1st, he will be in a position to clearly make sure that he addresses to the traders. When we met the minister of Kampala on Friday at the office of the prime minister, she confirmed that we are meeting the president on 31st. So even on Saturday, I was forced to call a bigger congregation or a bigger number of traders to come and confirm to them. Later at night, he sent us a WhatsApp voice note that the president is not going to meet traders, even without specifying any day when we are meeting the president. So the traders were requesting, why can't the president even just address them via TV or radio? So this thing can be harmonized so that the trader knows what next step am I taking. Has the president considered some solutions to the challenges we presented, or the president hasn't assisted us?
Tadio, some of your critics are saying the traders are behaving like children, and that if the president did not meet you, you are sulking and throwing your hands in the air to punish the rest of the country for the president not meeting you. He said August is just started, so why don't you have patience for him? They argue. What do you say to that?
No, the problem is the way the minister packaged the information, because the minister was calling for proposals that the president wants to give money to the traders. So the traders started thinking that maybe we, the leaders, we are not presenting their concerns properly to the head of state. So that's why we are appealing to the government officials. When you are packaging your information, can you consider the interests of the people you are addressing? So it's like the minister's strategy is to blackmail us as the leaders. That's what brought the problem. Personally, I never supported the demonstration because I was heading the delegations of engagements. But it's like the government technically is trying to weaken our influence by trying to blackmail us. So that's why you find that even when you try to explain to them, why can't you wait? They think that, chairman, maybe you are compromised. So you find that when I consult other sectoral leaders, that's how we resolve to continue with the demonstration.
But I understand the demonstration is having a devastating effect on businesses, not only in Kampala, but across the country. How are you going to mitigate this? Because it's the ordinary people who will suffer.
Yes, we are trying to find possible solutions. But, it wasn't our intention. But our traders are arguing it out that maybe the government doesn't value traders. Because the way they are handling the concern, this thing has been prolonged for over 5 years. Over 5 years, this is a very long time. Even they're asking, okay, if we could be waiting, why are the Chinese who are supposed to be in the factories still competing with the traders who came as manufacturers? Why is it that the values, they are not up to now so clear?
What is the way forward at the moment to help end the strike and resolve your concerns?
Today we are having a special meeting with more sectoral leaders to evaluate, and even the responses which we are getting from the government, because the Minister of Trade called me and told me that the government is committed to handle the concerns of the traders. But the traders also needed some commitment, maybe like an official communication from His Excellency or the minister, so that they can know this time that the government is not in politics, but is ready to handle the concerns. So we are trying to follow up with the government officials and some ministers. Very soon we shall be having an update.
Thaddeus Musoke is the leader of the Kampala City Traders Association, or KASITA. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Kenyan authorities have started a tracing process to quarantine people who came in contact with a man who has tested positive for the mpox virus, also known as monkeypox. Authorities say the man recently traveled through Kenya en route from Uganda to Rwanda. The virus has residents in one Kenyan country worried, as Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Kenyan Health Ministry has dispatched healthcare workers to Taita Taveta County, where a case of mpox was detected Wednesday. Authorities say the person who tested positive for the virus traveled through the county along the Kenyan-Tanzanian border. Kenya Health Ministry Principal Secretary Mary Muthoni said they deployed health officials in an effort to prevent the virus from spreading.
We are doing what we call contact tracing and more surveillance. We have enhanced on surveillance. But even in itself, by the virtue that our teams were able to detect these It shows you how much enhancement we have done at the border. Our port health officers in all the 32 points of entry are well trained, and we are able to monitor any kind of outbreak that may be at the border level.
Mpox, formerly known as monkeypox, is endemic to forested areas of East, Central and West Africa. Virus symptoms include high fever, skin rash, headache, swollen lymph nodes and general body aches. The virus can spread through direct contact with a sick person and also through respiratory droplets. According to the Africa Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, at least 1,450 people have died of Mpox across 15 African countries since the start of 2022. In the past 7 months, 14,250 Mpox cases and 456 deaths have been recorded. Taita Taveta County resident Haji Mohamed Mwakio told VOA he is concerned for himself and his community. He said, "I feel I'm in danger because since they announced the outbreak of the disease, I've not seen any measures being taken to sensitize the community and to advise the community to practice healthy living." Taita Taveta County is home to more than 340,000 people. Mudhoni of the Ministry of Health says medical officials are following up on the patient and the people he met.
We have been able to isolate this patient after testing. We are yet to confirm how many people he was with. So we have deployed our health teams to Taita Taveta for the response.
Health officials are concerned about an outbreak of the virus across several countries. According to the Associated Press, Burundi, Central African Republic and Rwanda reported Mpox cases for the first time this week. Mwakio says the countries need to work together to manage the spread of the virus. He says we would like countries to take precautions and control measures at border points to prevent the spread of the disease. He asks that the national and county government sensitize the community to understand the situation and how they can protect themselves. On Sunday, the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness Innovations, an organization that develops vaccines against emerging infectious diseases, announced plans to give an Mpox vaccine to those who have been exposed to the virus and see if it can protect them from the illness. Mohamed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
Zambia's information minister is sharply denying accusations that the government is secretly planning a constitutional amendment to boost President Hakainde Hichilema's stay in office. Cornelius Mwitwa, who is also the chief government spokesperson, says the accusations are yet another example of opposition attempt to make the government unpopular, which he says is not working. His remarks come after former President Edgar Lungu alleges a secret plan by the ruling UPND party to implement a new political system that will remove the 50% plus one constitutional provision and change the term limit from 5 to 7 years. But Information Minister Cornelius Mwitwa tells me that the allegations are without merit.
So these allegations are profoundly baseless and unsubstantiatable. They are a sideshow created to try and keep the nation busy to talk about, because they have no, you know, substantive alternative policies that they are able to promulgate to the citizenry. We have from time and again insisted that President Hakainde Hichilema has got no intention whatsoever to amend the constitution and place the same as priority ahead of addressing economic challenges of this country called Zambia. So as things stand, that statement coming from the former president, first of all, is a nullity ab initio, because there is no constitutional amendment which can be performed in any democracy under the veil of secrecy.
Mr. Mwitwa, talking about the two-thirds majority in parliament, some of your critics, the PF and other opposition parties, are saying the government has been on a campaign to try to remove some opposition members of parliament so the government can win, or the UPND can win those seats in parliament, in order to amend the constitution to remove the 50+1 provision and extend the presidential term limit from 5 to 7 years. What is your reaction to this accusation?
Well, there is no iota of truth in all that. And I think that that is hot air being blown from the opposition in advantages. And as a matter of reality, there are those who have been saying that the opposition Patriotic Front was fragmenting because of the wake of the ruling party. Here we are. The faction leader, Mr. Honorable Mayo Samba, has since reconciled with his party. So where does it emanate that the ruling party wants to declare seats vacant, want to create by-elections? No. They are themselves the architects of the troubled waters they find themselves plunging into right now. Their own man, whom they have since reconciled with, Honorable Mayo Samba, is the one under whose signature was the expulsion letter, which has seen 9 members of parliament, running up and down the courts and failing to seek the relevant remedy from, court, having been pronounced expelled by the party that sponsored them to parliament. So that is their own making.
The Patriotics for Economic Progress, PEP party leader Sean Tembo, is calling on the government to increase the salaries of police officers, saying that the recent high inflation has really eaten into the salaries of the police officers. And due to that, some recent instances where police officers are accused of engaging in crime is as a result of the diminishing pay from the government. What's your response to that?
First of all, I'd like to indicate that it is very, very shameful that you can have somebody make such kind of a statement. Anyway, as a matter of reality, Sean Tembo has no genuine and real mandate to speak in the manner he has, because he has stood in elections, including 21 general elections. And in most polling stations, he was getting 0 votes. So really, to take a tug of war with somebody who has no mandate could actually be giving credibility to unsubstantiable claims coming from himself. There is no civil servant who got employed on the basis that they will be paid a higher salary, and that is the only time they will respect the rule of law. Otherwise, there can be lawlessness. So that statement which he made is divorced of logic.
Cornelius Mwitwai, Zambia's information minister and chief government spokesperson. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, Namibia's Electoral Commission announced the end of its voter registration process on Thursday. It comes as the electoral body compiles a voter list to be used for the coming presidential and national elections scheduled for November 27. Devet Mulauli, spokesperson for the Electoral Commission, says officials are pleased with the registration of prospective voters ahead of the polls. His remarks come after opposition leaders criticized the Electoral Commission of incompetence during the registration process. Devet Mulauli tells me that the Electoral Commission resolved the concerns expressed by the critics that ensured a smoother voter registration process.
We have officially and efficiently completed the general registration of voters in Namibia. The general registration of voters commenced on the 3rd of June until today, the 1st of August, for 52 consecutive days. What this meant was the total registration of all eligible Namibians living locally in Namibia, as well as those living abroad, who are 18 years and above, to register as voters. So far, statistics released on the 27th of July It indicates that out of the total population of 1.6 million, we have so far registered, as at 27th, registered 1.3 million. So we are quite optimistic that within these 4 days, that means from Monday until today, we might have at least recorded quite a good number of registrations.
Well, there were initial concerns by the Electoral Commission. People were not going ahead to register at the polling stations and that enthusiasm was low. Was this corrected?
Yes, through the efforts from the Commission, of course, through the voter and civic education efforts, an initiative that were then employed by the Commission and with the assistance of other key stakeholders such as the political parties, youth groups, civil society organizations, as well as the Council of Churches and other stakeholders in the country. We started observing quite a good number of turnout in terms of registration, people going to registration points within, you know, at the beginning it was quite good. It declined in the second and the third week of June, and then it started picking up. And then in the last week, it started picking. So as we speak now, the registration points closed at 1900 hours. But then we still have queues, people in the queues that we think they will still be there until 10 or 2200 hours this evening.
Some opposition groups, including independent candidates, expressed concern about some deficiencies along the way in the voter registration. They said people were waiting too long. They themselves said they experienced a situation where it took so long for them to register. Were these concerns addressed?
Yes, the concerns were addressed as a commission closely. So what we did is alternative to address things, to dispatch additional registration kits to various registration points. Because when we started with the process, most of these registration points were only having one registration kit. So as we expedited the process, we started deploying additional kits. I think that was done actually in the second week of the registration. But additionally to that, we also established additional registration points to reinforce the current established registration teams.
What is the message to the people of Namibia as you compile this voter register list that will be used for the elections?
First of all, we would like to thank the electorate and the Namibian people at large for entrusting us with this process and also for assisting us in executing the process. We want to ensure or assure the nation that the process going forward, which will then follow the provision of the production of the provisional voters register, will be done and as planned. And we also want to reiterate that registering as a voter is one, but also the actual is to stand and vote. So we want to encourage Namibians to go out in numbers, just the way they came out in numbers to register, to also go out in numbers to go and cast their votes come the polling day.
Divert Mulauli is spokesperson of Namibia's Electoral Commission. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. In South Africa, a statement by Helen Zille, federal chairperson of the Democratic Alliance, or DA, is generating controversy. In a video that has since gone viral, Zille was quoted as saying that the government of National Unity, or GNU, is mainly because of the coalition between the African National Congress, ANC, and the DA. She also says smaller parties were brought into the coalition to enable President Cyril Ramaphosa to sell it to South Africans as the government of National Unity. Analysts say the poor showing of the ANC in the last national elections forced the party to enter a coalition with smaller political parties to form the government. For analysis, I reach Professor Tinyiko Maluleka. He is the Vice Chancellor of the Tshwane University of Technology.
Well, I think the reaction to it that you describe is a little bit overstated and overdone. I think people are overreacting to a statement they shouldn't really overreact to. Obviously, the government of national unity is a name that this government chose to give to itself. I don't think we should waste too much time on the semantics thereof. It was a self-chosen name intended to communicate the objective of the government, which is to forge national unity. Of course, there is no textbook somewhere, there is no Bible somewhere that says this is the definition of government of national unity, the only definition of government of national unity. There is no such thing. There's no Oxford Dictionary that provides that. You call a government national unity what you want to call it, depending on your intentions. But I think what is concerning, of course, is not so much the semantics, having dealt with the semantics. What is concerning is that Helen Zille appears to be suggesting that the DA and the ANC might not be of the same mind in terms of the broad vision of forging national unity and promoting it and advocating for it, and that they are in this relationship opportunistically, and that at any time they can go their own ways. And in a way, that doesn't surprise us. We expected that also. So, quite honestly, I don't think she has said anything new. Certainly, she has said anything that we ought to be hot over our collars with.
So, Professor Tinyuko, basically, you are saying she spoke the truth?
No, not necessarily the truth. I think she spoke the obvious.
Now, but some people are saying that the way it was presented to South Africans, which was meant to unite the country, is not what it seems to be, and that the South Africans were deceived by the semantics and thereabout the intention of the coalition, the government of national unity. What are your thoughts on that?
Maybe some South Africans may have been deceived by the semantics, but I think the majority of well-thinking South Africans have understood what was being attempted here, and therefore were not deceived by anyone at all. They understood that we are moving into new territory. They understood that the parties were trying to forge this idea of national unity. South Africans also understood that it could fall apart any time and any day, knowing as they do how selfish political parties and politicians are. I don't think South Africans are that naive to have believed that a government of national unity is beyond collapse by any means whatsoever. They have seen the behavior of politicians before. They understand this. I don't think we should take them for granted and think they were truly and properly deceived by anyone.
Prof, before you go, I asked for 5 minutes, and 5 minutes it is. What do you think are the prospects of this government of national unity from its inception, now that it started working? What do you think are the signs of the prospect?
A government of national unity, a coalition government, any government that consists of more than one party, it lives at the mercy of the parties that constitute it. So as long as the parties that constitute it consider their objective, their strategic objective, important and worth pursuing, it will stand. But as soon as one of them doesn't think that, it may collapse. But I think it will take a few more parties to leave than just the DA for the GNU to collapse completely.
Professor Tinyuko Maluleka is the Vice Chancellor of the Tshwane University of Technology. He spoke with me from the South African capital, Pretoria. It's time for music from our African collection.
Fire, 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 fire. You make me colo colo, hey, baby coco loco. I show you my shaka shaka, baby do it my boy. And I dance in my coco loco, hey, ah coco loco, hey, ah coco loco. I'm so fatigued, pass it to coco loco, hey, ah coco loco, oh yeah, ah coco loco, hey, coco loco. Na party na hot do coco loco, baby. Dancing my coco loco, you waste it to London, coco loco.
That was music from the continent, and we hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer Bob Baz, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, it only the chewy stick that knows the secrets of the mouth. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa. Semi, 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 semi